Welcome to the Mental Minute, an AI-generated podcast. Today we're looking into something that, well, it really shapes our whole world, often without us even noticing it. How to think like an engineer. And it's a mindset, you'll find, that goes way beyond just blueprints or, you know, circuit boards. It's actually a powerful way to tackle problems in almost any situation. We've pulled together insights from a whole range of sources, articles, research, real-world examples to give you some hopefully really useful takeaways. You know that feeling, right? Someone says, think outside the box, or, oh, that should be easy, and, well, it just isn't. It reminds me of learning to sing. They say, breathe from your diaphragm. Sounds simple.
Oh, yeah.
But actually doing it, it takes so much practice. It's really tough.
Exactly. Or like when a boss just says, okay, bring me some creative ideas.
Right. Easy to ask for.
But really hard to just conjure up on demand. And that frustration, it actually points to something really important. Thinking creatively, thinking outside the box, it's not just some special talent for a few people. I mean, look around. We all have access to pretty much the same information these days, right?
Yeah, generally.
So our real value, maybe even our dignity as humans, comes from what we do with that information, what we generate, not just what we consume.
Okay.
So that begs the question, why is it so difficult? Why is it so hard to step outside that comfortable space?
Okay, yeah. Let's unpack that. This idea of the box, it's not like a physical thing in our heads.
No.
It's more like a boundary between what we know and what we haven't thought about yet.
Precisely. Our minds, our knowledge, it kind of builds up organically, doesn't it? It's a mix of our genes, our upbringing, school, experiences.
Successes, failure.
All of it, yeah. And it creates this this comfort zone, like a little mental anthill where we feel safe.
An anthill, I like that.
And stepping outside that anthill, well, it feels risky, doesn't it?
Definitely. You might look silly or fail.
It challenges your reputation, what you know, and what's out there is, well, it's invisible. Unknown.
But you're saying we need to step out.
I think so, yes. Especially now. It's not just about solving this problem or that problem. It's more fundamental. It's about adapting, growing, really adding something unique in a world drowning in information.
So we need to generate something new to stand out.
To thrive, yeah. To really contribute.
Okay, so if we accept that stepping outside the anthill is crucial, how do we actually do it? It's not just waiting for an apple to fall on your head, is it?
Huh, no, not quite Newton's apple. And engineers don't just wait for inspiration. They have actual mechanisms, techniques.
Okay.
And it starts by recognizing how we usually think. We rely mostly on what's called convergent information.
Convergent.
Meaning the stuff we already know. The requirements, the data, the specifications, what worked before. It's about narrowing things down.
Right. Focusing in.
Exactly. But to really break out, you need to deliberately add divergent information.
Divergent. So the opposite.
Pretty much. Something that seems wrong, maybe even absurd, or just unrelated. Something that pulls you away from the obvious path.
Okay. Give me an example, maybe.
Sure. Let's say you're designing a chair. Convergent thinking uses known chair designs, materials, ergonomics. Divergent thinking might ask, what if a chair floated? Or what if a chair was made of sound?
Okay, wild ideas.
Wild, yes. But they force your brain onto new tracks. This divergent stuff is absolutely essential for crossing those mental borders, getting outside the anthill. When you step outside the known like that, you enter this kind of suspended state. It's a bit like the middle part of a chess game.
How so?
Well, there's no clear opening move anymore, no obvious endgame strategy. You're in this ambiguous space.
And the temptation is to just go back to what feels safe.
Exactly, to retreat, to go back to convergent thinking. But you have to resist that. And this is where something called long thinking comes into play.
Long thinking, not deep thinking.
Not necessarily deep or even brilliant in the usual sense. It means thought that takes you far, that explores widely. Think about appreciating, say, complex music or poetry.
Right.
The feeling, the meaning, it comes from the whole thing together, right? The combination, not just one note or one word. Long thinking is like that sustained exploration without rushing to an answer.
That makes sense. Letting ideas percolate almost.
Yes. Exploring without judgment initially.
But okay, once you have all these divergent, maybe crazy ideas floating around from this long thinking, how do engineers bring it back? How do they actually make something useful? It can't just stay chaotic.
Absolutely not. And this is where it gets really interesting, because even when an engineer's thinking is highly creative and divergent, it's also incredibly structured, analytical.
Structure. Okay.
Yeah. There's often a kind of process, maybe 8 steps, you could say, that can be applied to pretty much any problem, business, personal life, anything.
8 steps. Okay, let's walk through that. What's step one?
Step one, define the root problem. Really dig deep. Don't just look at the symptom.
So not just sales are down, but why are sales down? Is it the product? The marketing? Competitors.
Exactly. Get to the fundamental issue.
Okay. Step two.
Step two is usually about gathering information and research. You need data. Understand the context, what's been tried, what the constraints might be.
Makes sense. You can't solve it in a vacuum. What's three?
Three, identify the constraints. What are the limitations? Time, money, materials, even people's skills or personalities sometimes.
Right. What are you working with? Okay. Four.
Four is brainstorming solutions. This is where that divergent thinking comes back in, but maybe more focused now. Generate lots of alternatives. Don't settle on the first idea.
Get all the options out there.
Yeah.
Good and maybe not so good at first.
Yep. Then step five, select the most effective solution. Evaluate those options. Which one is most efficient, feasible, likely to actually solve the root problem identified in step one?
So filtering based on reality now, time, money, effort.
Precisely. Step six is develop or prototype the solution. Build a small version, a model, a pilot program. Don't go all in immediately.
Test it out small scale first.
Yeah.
Learn from it.
Mm-hmm. Then step seven, implement the chosen solution. This is where you actually build it, roll it out, put the plan into action based on the prototype findings.
Make it happen.
Right. And finally, step eight, which is crucial and maybe ongoing, test, evaluate, and iterate.
It's iterate, meaning...
Meaning you try it, see what happens, get feedback, fail sometimes, and then adjust, improve it. It's a loop, not really an end point.
So engineers have to be willing to change their minds, not get too attached to their first idea.
Oh, absolutely. Constantly questioning, never just assuming it's perfect. The focus is on what works consistently and reliably in the real world, not just what's theoretically elegant.
That iterative part sounds key.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned systems thinking, too.
Yes, that's often woven through the process. Systems thinking means breaking down big, complex problems into smaller, manageable parts.
Decomposing them.
Exactly. You see how fixing smaller issues can build up to solving the big one. You also understand how all the parts interact within the whole system.
And what was that about designing for stupidity? That sounds funny.
Huh. Yeah, it's a bit blunt, but vital. It means anticipating how things might be misused or where human error could creep in, and then designing the system or product to be resistant to those errors.
Like making a plug only fit one way.
Perfect example. Or putting safety warnings on things that seem obvious. You account for potential mistakes to prevent problems down the line.
That really shows how practical this mindset is. It's not just theoretical.
Not at all.
It makes me think about, you know, everyday things. Like you said, a simple utility pole. We just walk past them.
Mm-hmm.
But an engineer sees, well, a whole history of solved problems, right?
Mm-hmm.
The insulator stopping shocks, the guy wires balancing forces, even where it's placed to avoid cars.
Every detail has a reason, a purpose. It's a solution.
Yeah. Or that story about the Hernando de Soto bridge crack. It was apparently visible for years from boats below.
That's the story, yes.
But it took engineers with their trained eyes and understanding of structures to actually see it, recognize the danger, and raise the alarm.
It shows the importance of not just looking, but truly seeing and understanding the constructed world around us, applying that analytical lens.
Which challenges that idea of engineers just being stuck in their technical silo.
It really does. That perception is often inaccurate. Engineering is, or at least should be, deeply interconnected with society. And think about the responsibility. If a doctor makes a mistake, it's usually one patient, tragically.
Right.
If an engineer makes a significant mistake, a bridge, a power grid, software controlling critical systems, it can impact huge numbers of people.
That's a heavy weight.
It is, which is why that strong technical foundation is non-negotiable. But increasingly, there's this understanding that engineers also need to communicate better.
Break down those silos you mentioned.
Exactly. Talk to marketing, talk to economists, talk to the public. We need collaboration across fields, not just isolated experts doing their thing. Our biggest challenges, like climate change or building sustainable cities, demand that kind of integrated approach.
And there's an ethical dimension too, isn't there? You mentioned integrity.
Absolutely critical. Honesty, transparency. Not exaggerating claims, not hiding problems, taking responsibility.
Because trust is paramount. If you can't trust the engineering behind a bridge or a plane,
the whole system breaks down. That ethical core, that integrity, it has to be absolute.
So bringing it all together, This mindset, it's analytical, it's structured, it's creative, it's iterative, it's systems aware, it's ethical.
And it's fundamentally about being both optimistic and optimized.
Optimistic and optimized. Explain that a bit more.
Well, optimism is that forward-looking belief that things can be improved, that problems can be solved. It's the engine for progress.
The belief that makes you start in the first place.
Right. And optimization is the actual process, the rigorous seeking and producing of that improvement. It's the structured effort to make things better.
Like the Wright brothers you mentioned, they had the optimism, the belief they could fly.
And they relentlessly optimized their designs through trial and error, through that iterative process we talked about. They didn't just hope. They systematically worked towards the solution.
So it's taking that natural human curiosity, that what if,
yeah,
and applying structure and discipline to it.
Precisely. To solve problems, make things work better, create value. It's a mindset that lets you adapt, figure things out, and always be asking, how can we do this better?
It sounds like a really powerful way to approach, well, almost anything.
I think it is. It equips you to not just react to the world, but to actively shape it for the better.
So the next time you're looking at, I don't know, a complex machine or even just facing a tough challenge in your own life, maybe pause and think like an engineer. Observe carefully, analyze the real problem, brainstorm options, test things out, and keep refining. Optimize.
See the opportunities hidden inside the problems.
It's a powerful toolkit for sure. A reminder that there's usually a structured, creative path forward waiting to be found. That's all for this episode. Thanks for tuning in.